Good afternoon, Sharon Lynn Harrison, and thank you so much for spending some time with me to talk about living adaptive leadership. I think this is the fifth in our series, in our podcast series, where we've talked to folks who are implementing adaptive leadership in youth advocacy, in school mental health, in community-based equity programs. And today we get to talk with you about adaptive leadership and how it shows up in evaluation, and particularly for evaluators who are looking to practice culturally responsive and equitable evaluation. So before we go very far, I'd like to ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself, anything you want the folks listening to know about you.
All right. Well, I am an evaluator by training. That's actually what my degree is in. And I started my evaluation work at Wayne State University with the Developmental Disabilities Institute, the University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. And from there, I opened my own firm in 2001. It's called Public Research and Evaluation Services. And most of my work, even there while at the university, and certainly as president and CEO of Public Research and Evaluation Services, has been around equity, disproportionality, anti-racism. And so it's just fitting that, and I'm also a senior consultant for the National Center for Cultural Competence. I've been working with them since late 90s, we'll just say. And so it's just always been my passion and part of the work that I've had an opportunity to do around looking around at cultural competence, looking at the work that we do in communities and making sure that we are being respectful, culturally responsive, again, competent around how we approach communities. And so it just came naturally into the research and evaluation work I do. And so even before they really started, or I had heard about CREE, it's work that I have been doing since the late 90s. So I was very excited to hear about the conversations when I would learned about CREE and culturally responsive and equitable evaluation and the lens and the processes we should use to make sure that priority communities or those with the lived experiences are really telling us what we should be doing around being a part of the strength that they want to bring into their communities.
What a wonderful career you've had so far, and probably so much more to do. You know, one of the questions I like to ask folks that I do these podcasts with is when they first felt like a leader themselves. Can you talk a little bit about that, Sharon Lynn? When did you first feel like a leader?
I think it was when I would say probably once I got into leadership positions. If I looked really way back just into my life, it really started when I was quite young, and I didn't think about that until probably about 2 years ago. My daughter wanted to wear, I was the president of a high school club, and my daughter wanted to wear my club sweater. And you had patches on your sweater, and I had a patch on my sweater that was PRES, which is also the acronym for my company. And she's like, oh, you knew about PRES back then? I was like, no, that actually was the patch for the president. So I was president of the club, president of the teachers union here. So just always found myself in leadership activities, but did not really look at it as anything besides just who I was. It wasn't until really my daughter noticed that on the sweater that I was like, wait a minute, I've done a lot of things in leadership throughout my life. So I would just say, again, I never really thought about it. I just always had a desire to be a spokesperson and knew that I had organizational skills, so wanted to be the person that could organize things to make something happen. And so I think, again, I never really thought about it really till just recently. One time, I also do a lot of leadership activities at my church, and I was kind of taking a year off, and this one guy called me and he says, Sherilyn, you've got to do something. You're a leader. And I was like, oh. So just, again, just never really thought about it until I started looking at different points in my life of things I had done over my life.
Yeah. It's so interesting that leadership, and I think this is true for the way we think about leadership as a discipline, that it comes with a role. And yet when we really think about who we are as leaders, like who we are, not doing leadership, but who we are, it comes from those early moments of, I have something to offer, right? I'm not doing it alone. I'm engaging with other people. Maybe I'm inspiring. Maybe I can coordinate. Maybe I have a vision. But there's something about that early life that instills leadership in our blood.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Because actually, when I thought back even further, like in elementary school, I took like the main role in the Christmas play, and it had a comedic line at the end, and I was very comfortable with saying this line. I had to pretend like I was Donald Duck. And I was in the fifth grade, and I took that line, and it was the closing of the play, and everybody laughed. And I was just thinking that had to be pretty courageous for somebody, you know, that young to do that. And like I said, I ran for in high school in a role. So it was just there. And I don't think you really think about it. It's just that you say, I have something to contribute. I didn't win. I almost wanted a recount. But anyway, I think I actually did ask for a recount. But anyway, it was just interesting when I sat and thought about, I've been doing activities and leading for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, thank you for sharing that about your earlier life. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about when you first noticed that leadership is related to evaluation work. I think you and I talked about that earlier around expanding the bench and the work we did to integrate leadership approach or concepts into the work of culturally responsive and equitable evaluation. But I'm sort of going a little bit earlier. When did it occur to you, or what occurred to you around this integration of leadership and evaluation?
I think I noticed that I felt like the picture wasn't full enough around evaluation, that most of the time when I've done evaluation work, I would say probably 97% of the time it's been around funded projects. So either I'm at the table when they're developing the plan for the grant or the proposal, or I'm brought in pretty soon. And I saw that often individuals would forget what they wrote in the proposal. And so they'd be, and it wasn't anything malice or trying to be not genuine or honest. They'd be excited about the money, and then they'd start kind of traveling along a different role. And so I would always go to meetings with two things, the RFP and the proposal. And I would say, and even though I was the evaluator, and sometimes I would almost check myself, like, why are you in there guiding this project? You're the evaluator. But I finally settled within myself, if I don't help them stay on point, it's going to be very difficult to evaluate the project. And when it comes down to time to write the report or collect the data, that we're going to be on a totally different avenue. And so I realized, and I started even telling clients, you are going to notice that I'm going to be the person that's going to keep going back to the proposal. I'm going to be the person that's going to keep going back to the logic model. I'm going to continue to pull up the RFP. And so I realized that other evaluators weren't doing that. In fact, some evaluators would even say, you know, if they were in the room too, why are you doing that? But now that is definitely 100% the way I work. I still do that. If I'm on a project and it's been funded, I'm the one that pulls up the grant and pulls up the RFP and say, let's make sure we're staying on the right track. We really didn't say that we were going to do that, but of course we have flexibility if it's needed. Let's make sure we're able to tell that story. Let's make sure we're able to tell the funder why we made that shift. Let's make sure that we're hearing from the we're hearing from the community if we're going to make that shift. And so that's when I realized that my role was, I was expanding my role besides just being that person coming in and writing a plan and figuring out how to collect data and look at outcomes, that instead as an evaluator, I was taking a role of making sure also that we were, again, staying on the right track, staying on the right road. And again, I realized that that was something unique that I was probably doing as an evaluator because other people weren't talking about it as much as I was.
Yeah, you really talked about the need for an expanded role in evaluation for evaluators.
Yes.
And that you really looked at your role as one of integrity. How do I think about integrity in the change process that these folks have proposed? Mm-hmm. And how do I mobilize them to change in a way that has guardrails and guidelines to it so that they can tell the story that they intended to tell at the end of the day? And I want to go back to that word courage that you used earlier, because I'm wondering if courage was part of the way that you defined the role and the way that you implemented it, because it doesn't sound like it was the way most evaluators thought about themselves.
Yeah, it takes courage because you do feel like, again, why am I expanding my role? And sometimes I've gotten shut down on that, but particularly when I think that we're heading down a road that's not going to benefit the priority community or those with lived experiences, I'm really one that will come back again and again. Part of it is really figuring out when to keep pushing the needle. And sometimes I'll step back and just say, okay, maybe today's not the day to have that conversation. Let me share some of the resources and information that I have around why I'm insisting this is important. I mean, I've been on projects before where I brought up the idea about cultural competence and they'll say, oh, well, we're not going to work on that. We're not working on that with this project. And I'm going, okay, well, that's really who's being affected by this thing that we're trying to do, but I'll come back. You know, I won't just sit there and I'll be disappointed, but I will wait and come back and find different ways of informing individuals. And you have to wait sometimes. It requires a lot of patience till individuals get to a point where they understand or are willing to listen to what you're trying to say. So courage and patience.
Yeah, courage and patience. I wonder if you might add the words persistent and strategic.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So important to have a willingness to be persistent and a necessity of being a strategic. You have to figure out a lot of different ways of communicating, of educating, informing. You know, I even think about it when I'm negotiating contracts. I mean, there's certain days and times. Is this the right time? Is this the right day to really talk about that? Do I need more time? Because I've really found stepping back and thinking and not always having, and that just comes with, you know, growing up too. You don't always have to say what you think should happen right away. Sometimes you need to step back and think about it. And I think that's important for leaders as well as evaluators.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're offering is that it isn't just what the story that you want to tell or the point that you want to make. It's also understanding where the people that you're with might be so that you can communicate things in a way that they can hear it.
Absolutely. And that's something I learned. I do a lot of diversity training still, meaning that I attend a lot of anti-racism equity training. And that was something that they mentioned in Courageous Conversations about race, that you have to know when it's time to have these conversations. And so I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you think about the field of evaluation, and I'm going to ask you two questions. I want to ask you broadly about the field of evaluation, and then I want to ask you specifically about evaluators from diverse racial and ethnic backgrounds. First question about the broad evaluation field. What leadership skills do you most think evaluators need to acquire or reflect on or make sure that they possess to do their very best work?
I think they have to know how to galvanize a team that is both made up of their own team and the organization. It can't be two separate entities functioning. You have to develop this full partnership with the organization that you're working with. And then you have to help that organization develop a full partnership with the priority population or those with lived experience. And that, to me, really requires time, commitment, willingness to provide training and technical assistance on little points that you take for granted about evaluation that organizations or individuals that aren't living it day to day would need help on. So I do a lot of training when I'm working with an organization. I think you also have to be infectious about evaluation, and that's kind of what people tease me. Oh, here she goes. She makes it so much fun. She makes us want to do data. I tell everybody that I work with, you may not like data, but when I finish with you, I think you might like data a little bit. And so I think it just is also important for us to create that buy-in, because data is it. We see where data is now, just even with big data, with Facebook, with Instagram. All these things are living and functioning based on what they're learning from data, besides the decisions we have to make on a day-to-day basis based on data. So I try to get individuals, I like to demystify it. I think that's another big example. I don't walk in like I'm the big data czarina, but instead making sure that you want to understand your data so that you know what's going on in your organization, what's going on in your project, and you want to make sure that you have structures in place so that's ongoing and not just a one-time thing. And so I think just, again, making sure that you're creating this team, this team that has respect and a willingness to really work together and to work things out together, and that evaluator serves as kind of like that team coach that's helping both sides and including, again, the community to come together to do the work.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Heifetz concept of the holding environment. Mm-hmm. You're as an evaluator, you are creating a container where people with different perspectives can come together, where they can share their perspectives and their ideas.
Yes.
But also, they're coming in with probably different attitudes about evaluation.
Yes.
And data.
Yes.
Different beliefs, maybe, mm-hmm. about the power of data.
Right.
Different values around evaluation as a whole, but also the different pieces of it. And to be able to think through those differences of values and beliefs.
Yes.
Changes the way that we practice.
Absolutely.
And you're providing that space. And I don't often hear people talk about evaluators being the ones to hold the container, mm-hmm. to create the container, to hold the container, to facilitate it, to maybe make people a little uncomfortable sometimes, but also to have a sense of where that vision for data is.
Yes.
So you come in with that vision and you create that shared vision, but there's the path to shared vision.
Yes.
Is fraught with barriers and challenges and disparate values and beliefs, and you're creating you're navigating through that in that holding environment.
Yes, that's what I try to do. That's why whenever I get projects, I immediately want to meet every week. And I learned that from actually one of my clients, because he held weekly meetings, and I was like, every week? But I saw that we were able to stay on point. Eventually, we could say, okay, we can meet every 2 weeks now. Okay, we can meet every month. But I never start a project without asking for weekly meetings until we're going, because you got to get that shared understanding. You've got to get that shared responsibility, get on the same page. So every week, I like, when I first start a project, I says, okay, I'd like to meet weekly. And I find that organizations feel then that you're really committed to getting the work done, that you're not just going to be somebody that they call once a month to see what's going on, but I'm in here and I want to see you successful and I want to help you learn about what's involved in getting there. So
that's the infectious part, right?
Probably.
The infectious evaluator.
Yeah.
So let's turn our attention to evaluators from different or diverse racial and ethnic backgrounds, particularly around the practice of culturally responsive and equitable evaluation. How does leadership show up for them?
Well, I think fortunately now we're probably seeing a different level of respect that we didn't before. I remember when I first started, I was working at Wayne State running a research and a department. And was working with a governmental organization, we'll just say. And they convened an evaluation team. We were coming up with indicators and data collect, coming up with an evaluation plan. And every time I would present something, it would be shot down by all of these evaluators. I was younger. And so it was at least 20 years ago, because my youngest had not been born yet. And I remember just finally having to say to them, this is not my dissertation committee. I'm a fully functional evaluator. I'm a fully functional researcher. So can we work together to figure this out? So I'm really happy that the conversation around CREA and the understanding that the opportunities that evaluators and researchers of color didn't have unless we created them ourselves are finally starting to be recognized, talked about, and sought after. But that was not always the way it was. I mean, it's possible, I've seen projects before where I've been on for years and then they decided, oh, we need to go with this person because they've been around since before the flood. Well, just like they've got to convene a team, I have to convene a team. Just like I've shown you that I have the capability, the qualities, the team that can do the work, there's no difference here. And so I think that has been the struggle and the pain of being in this field when you weren't recognized for your contributions, your potential to contribute. You were just immediately looked at as being less qualified, less experienced, having less capacity to do the work. So I'm glad that there's now, again, and that's why I joined LEAD and applied for it once I heard about it. Because I was really excited to hear that now there's this focus on making sure that evaluators and researchers of color get the opportunities that others have.
Yeah, it's been in your lifetime, in your career, in your working life, it's been an evolution, it sounds like. So I'm a little curious about the next steps in terms of supporting the leadership of evaluators of color. What are the next steps in that? What do you want to see for younger evaluators from different backgrounds, finding their space, able to hold that container?
Well, certainly I'd like to see them get the big dollar opportunities. I mean, I think if we looked at the data, we would still see disparities there. We would see inequities. And so I would love to see the young, new evaluators not have the opportunities that we, some of those of us that are on the back end of our career, not have those opportunities. I'd love to see, because there's some brilliance. And that's another thing I love about LEAD. Oh my goodness, the brilliance that is coming up. My daughter is also following in my footsteps, just going to be a brilliant evaluator and researcher. They have a lot more information available to them than we did. We're kind of like going through it now, but that's what they're being trained on in schools and in workshops. And so I would love to see them have all the opportunities afforded to others that so that they can have an opportunity to contribute to the change, to the information, and to the decisions that we make about what's worthy in our society.
So their leadership means having a place at the table, having a strong voice. Mm-hmm. In determining value and worthiness. Yes. And effectiveness.
Yes. Even being the table that they're bringing in, you know, the individuals in the table, again, that they have that full opportunity, that full, I don't want to use the word power because that sounds, but that influence, they have that same opportunity to speak up. And I mean, we're looking now, we've got a Black woman, Black Asian heritage woman that is vice president. Who would have thought? And that's this. And I love that our children are getting an opportunity to see that. And I want them to also be able to see that in the field of evaluation and research, because it's still not there.
Yeah.
It's still not there.
It's not there. And I think that all of us have a responsibility. All of us have a responsibility to do what it takes to get there.
Yes.
So just, I guess, in closing, what else would you like to say maybe that I didn't ask you about that relates to evaluation and leadership and equity?
Yes, I'm going to say two things. First, again, making sure that the opportunities are there, the trust is there, that it doesn't always have to be a university, which, you know, 9 times out of 10, we're running, you know, our own companies. And so we want to have those opportunities. And if we are at universities, that we want to be the principal investigators of the research, because there is a quality that comes when I'm living that experience, or when I understand that community, when I have relationships in that community, when I've taken the time to make sure that I have ideas about what is important to that community. Even though I would not even trust myself, I would again need to make sure that I am communicating, connecting, listening to, involving, being guided by the community with the lived experiences. And my second idea around equity is making sure for real that we don't do that just as a perfunctory task, that we are really interested. There are individuals in communities that may not have degrees, that may not be evaluators, but have a lot of great ideas about what's needed, have the ideas about what's needed to make changes and strengthen their communities. And a lot of times, evaluators, because of our background, our academic connections, and particularly when we don't share the background of the community, we think we can fly in and be the savior of the community. And I think we just have to keep in mind, we have to decide that we are not going to work any other way, but in a way that respects that community, that offers and makes sure that their voice is heard, that the voice of the community, the voice of those with the lived experience is guiding what we hope to see and learn. And so again, if it means teaching them what it means to be involved in evaluation. I've done that before. I've done that with communities. I had a project when I was at Wayne State where we worked with individuals with disabilities. So we took them through a one evaluation 101. And I've done that in other projects too. Okay, you're going to be working with me, and we're going to be working together on the evaluation, is a better way to say, the appropriate way to talk about that. So this is some things you need to understand just around the field of evaluation. You can do it. And we're going to be coming up with tools. And so, am I asking this question the right way? Do you think this is the best way? Do you think this is an important question? Who should I talk to about that? Are there individuals in your community that I could learn more about? Who can connect? Who can serve as a broker or a connection? And I've heard many times that individuals say that takes longer. It sure does, but it's also going to strengthen the work that we're trying to do. If we're really committed to making a difference in this world and in communities where we're seeing particularly difficult outcomes and circumstances. I even think about with COVID, I'm just waiting to see what is going to be done around looking at what could have been done differently around COVID, and what do we even do now around making sure that we're serving these communities that have been more impacted by the virus. You're going to really need to hear from those communities, and it's going to be important to connect with individuals who have relationships in those communities and shared backgrounds and experiences.
Yeah. I think what you just described is some nested adaptive work,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's adaptive work around who am I as an evaluator and who am I as an evaluator who leads. I think that's adaptive work.
Yes, absolutely.
And the other adaptive work is, what is our expectation about how good evaluation is done? Right? Because if we're talking about the time it takes to engage community members meaningfully by folks who really know how to listen, know how to ask questions, know how to analyze data from the perspective of the community members, we have some work to do, right?
Absolutely.
To address those differences in beliefs and attitudes around that. I know you are leading that charge, and I so appreciate all of your contributions to our LEAD program as faculty.
Thank you.
I appreciate all that you do for the Expanding the Bench work. I appreciate your perspective on evaluation and leadership, and that you are one of the first people I talked to that knew about adaptive leadership and saw the integration, saw the parallels and the ways in which they could enhance each other. I guess the last thing I'll say is that it's not a surprise to me that you were at the National Center for Cultural Competence, and I bet Tawara Good is a very good friend of yours.
That's my buddy, yes.
I knew it.
I love her, yes.
Yeah, yes. It's not. No, I see similarities in the two of you, so
we're really like wonderful. Sisters. We call ourselves sisters, yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Sharon Lynn, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom and your gift to the world. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I was really excited about having an opportunity to do this. I really just see all the traits that come in with being an adaptive leader. You've got to be an adaptive leader to function, because you bring about organizational change. I mean, I have stories upon stories about the changes that evaluators bring about. And so you have to know that a technical fix is not going to prepare an organization for when you leave. That organization has to shift. And so you've got to be able to make changes to help them make changes to their vision and how they work in terms of diverse with their teams. So I really know that that's what's so important too in terms of being a leader in evaluation. You've got to understand that it's a big job, and it requires you understanding how to be an adaptive leader, especially when you're doing a developmental evaluation and you're helping an organization figure out. But I've seen that in all my projects where I've had to really just help them sit down and think about where they are and where they want to go as an organization. Evaluation shifts an organization. It shifts the way people think. It shifts the way people work. It shifts the way people interact. And so you need to be sure you're adaptive, leadership competent as you seek to be an evaluator.
Oh, that was the best. Well, I think that is an excellent place to close us out, and I'm just again grateful.
Okay, thank you.